Chapter 4, Jenny, 1940 to 1942. In October 1940, on the morning of Irene's wedding to Sam Fine, Jenny found Ruby sitting on the toilet seat in the bathroom, her red curls lying on her shoulders, her lap, the sink, the floor, like spirals of blood. She had taken their mother's kitchen shears and hacked off her hair. "What have you done, Ruby?" Ruby gasped as if coming up from a deep underwater dive and shoved Jenny hard against the towel rack. "Leave me alone." Her hand clawed the scissors. "Ruby, shh, it's all right." "No, no." Her head swiveled back and forth. "She has no right. It should be me." Ruby's hair was sticking out every which way, and there were patches of scalp showing through. Her face was mottled with tears. "What are you talking about?" Jenny asked. "Why did you cut your beautiful hair?" "That's what brides do. They cut their hair. They wear a wig," she wailed. "I should be the bride." "Oh, Ruby, Ruby, we don't do that. Only very religious people do that."
"She's only 19. I'm 22. She should have waited. I should be first."
Jenny crouched beside her, knees butting up against the sink. The bathroom was so crowded, her heels hit the tub where a wooden drying rack stood draped with socks and panties and brassieres. She patted Ruby's shoulder.
"It doesn't matter, Ruby. Shh, it doesn't matter." "I don't know what to do," Ruby whispered. "I don't know what to do."
Jenny took the scissors from Ruby, led her from the bathroom to the bedroom, and laid Ruby on their bed. Then she went to her parents' bedroom to get Bessie, who was fussing over Irene's hair. Jenny stood in the doorway and beckoned her mother, who followed Jenny into the hall. Jenny pulled Bessie's hand and led her to Ruby. Ruby was supine on the bed, her arms stiff by her side. Bessie's jaw dropped. She covered her mouth so she wouldn't cry out loud. She knelt and whispered Ruby's name and touched her ruined hair. Jenny had never seen Ruby quite like this before. With her hair chopped off, her eyes staring at the ceiling, she looked like a madwoman. Jenny whispered,
"I didn't know what to do."
"Go to Irene," Bessie whispered. "Don't let her come in here."
Jenny nodded and went back to her parents' room. She sat on the bed watching Irene dab her cheeks with rouge, blot her mouth with lipstick, comb her hair into an upsweep, place the veil on her head.
"How do I look?"
Irene asked, standing up.
"Beautiful,"
Jenny said.
And Irene did look lovely.
Her hair, a deep chestnut, was piled on her head, and a wreath of flowers was wound in and out of the curls.
"You are just beautiful."
But Jenny's face was ashen, and she could not summon a smile.
"What's the matter?" Irene asked. "Is something wrong?"
Jenny nodded.
"What?"
"Ruby's having one of her fits."
"Of course."
Irene dropped onto the bed.
"What happened?"
"She cut off her hair,"
Jenny said.
"She just chopped it off every which way. She looks awful."
"Oh my God, why does she always ruin everything?"
Irene pulled the veil off her head and threw it on the bed. Now the upsweep was lopsided, hairpins sticking out. Jenny couldn't look at her.
"She can't help it."
"Maybe not, but Mama and Papa could."
Irene paced up and down, her feet in high-heeled slippers pounding against the wooden floor.
"They pretend she's normal, and she isn't. The only one in the house who ever speaks the truth about Ruby is Bubby Ida, and Mama doesn't listen to her. Ruby always does this."
She took one shoe off, threw it across the room, and started to cry.
"It's my wedding day, and she's ruining it."
Jenny put her arms around Irene and held her until she stopped sobbing.
"Your mascara is running," she said.
Irene sat down in front of the mirror, wiping her tears and the black mascara leaking around her eyes. She took a tissue and started to repair the mess, but then stopped.
"She was supposed to be my maid of honor. I never wanted to ask her, but Mama made me."
Irene threw the tissues on the vanity. She looked into the mirror at Jenny standing behind her.
"Will you do it? Be my maid of honor?"
Jenny nodded. She began to fix Irene's hair, but Irene pushed her hands away.
"I'll do it. You go get dressed."
Jenny left her parents' bedroom and went to her own. Bessie was still there, patting Ruby's hand, but Ruby lay, eyes fixed ahead, unblinking.
"Mama?"
You have to get dressed,
Jenny said. Bessie sighed. She can't come, she said, nodding her chin toward Ruby. I gave her the laudanum, and I sent Morris to ask Mrs. Fagenbaum if she would sit with her. She got up and walked to the door. I'll get dressed now. You do too. Then help Bubby, Ida, and Faye. Jenny put on the pink silk dress she had borrowed from her best friend, fixed her hair so it was smooth on her shoulders, dabbed on a little lipstick, and, ignoring Ruby, walked out of the room into the tiny bedroom that Faye and Bubby Ida shared. 11-year-old Faye was sitting primly on her narrow bed, trying not to mess her freshly ironed blue dress. Bubby Ida was already wearing her navy silk dress. Around her neck was the gold necklace she always wore. In her hands was a string of pearls.
They were my mother's, she said. Give them to Irene to wear.
Jenny nodded and took the pearls.
Ruby's sick. She can't come.
What?
What's wrong?
She cut off her hair. She's having one of her fits.
Bubby Ida rushed from the room and Jenny grabbed Faye, who started to follow her.
Come with me to give the pearls to Irene. They don't need you asking questions.
The family gathered in the living room, waiting for Mrs. Fagenbaum to come and sit with Ruby. At the wedding, they tried to have a good time, but the formal photographs show the family standing in a line, dressed in their finest clothing, and there is not a smile on anyone's face. After Irene's wedding, Ruby spiraled down. Irene and Sam went on a 2-week honeymoon to Niagara Falls and Canada, and the rest of the family watched Ruby. She barely got out of bed for 3 days, and she wouldn't eat. Bessie tempted her with her favorite foods. She made Ruby soup, gave her the white meat from the chicken, baked lemon cookies, hovered over her, cajoling her to eat. Bubby Ida was irritated, and Jenny heard her say,
"Leave her. Stop fussing over her. It makes it worse."
Ruby sat at the dining table, mumbling to herself, keeping her eyes downcast. When Jenny leaned over to listen to what she was saying, she realized it was Hebrew, a prayer, or part of one. Over and over, Ruby whispered,
Baruch atah Adonai, Baruch atah Adonai.
Abe pushed his chair back from the dinner table and, almost shouting, said to Bessie,
It's too much. She is a dibbuk. You have to do something.
It's not a dibbuk. She's praying, Jenny said.
It doesn't matter. We have to do something,
Abe said. All right, I'll talk to Dr. Marsh again. This time, Dr. Marsh sent them to a psychiatrist, Dr. Franklin, whose office was in the back of his large house on Ocean Avenue. In Dr. Franklin's consultation room, Bessie, Abe, and Ruby sat in hardback chairs while he talked to them. Jenny had come with them, another set of ears to help them understand any complicated medical information. The room smelled of cigarette smoke, and there was an ashtray overflowing with butts on the doctor's desk. Jenny stood behind her mother's chair, hands behind her back, and watched the doctor talk to Ruby, whose eyes were downcast. She whispered her answers to his questions. Jenny could barely hear.
I'm prescribing phenobarbital, Dr. Franklin said. She says she's not sleeping. This will calm her down, help her sleep better.
Dr. Marsh said laudanum, Bessie said. Dr. Franklin pushed his glasses up on his sharp nose.
Laudanum is addictive. Phenobarbital will help with her anxiety. It will be better.
The family nodded, waited for more instructions.
And I think you should take her to the country. The air will do her good.
Dr. Franklin bent over his desk, scribbling on a pad. His fingers were stained yellow from nicotine.
How? How will going to the country solve anything?
Jenny whispered to Bessie. Dr. Franklin heard her and looked up from his pad.
It will get her away from everything, he said. All the things that upset her in the family.
Bessie looked with alarm at Jenny, at Abe.
I don't think it's the family that upsets her, she said. It's just the way she is.
Yes, well, you said this started at her sister's wedding. Getting her away will help.
He spoke with such authority that Bessie, Abe, and Jenny just nodded, afraid to protest.
If it doesn't, we will have to look into hospitalization at Kings County Psychiatric Center.
Bessie said quickly, I saw it. I went there to look. I don't want her to go there.
Dr. Franklin nodded. Take her to the country. Then we'll see.
Bessie and Abe sent Jenny with Ruby to the country for a week.
to Gold's, a small family-run hotel in Lakewood, New Jersey, where the dining room offered three meals a day. It was off-season, not crowded. There were a few older couples there, and one scholarly-looking gentleman who sat at a table in the dining room alone, reading. From the porch of the hotel, there was a distant view of a small lake. It was the end of October, and the weather was surprisingly warm. The trees behind the lake were every color of red, gold, orange, and maroon. Champagne-colored reeds lined the opposite shore, and ducks paddled, dipping their heads to fish, while two enormous white swans drifted through the water. Their bedroom had twin beds with white chenille spreads and rag rugs on the floor. Jenny and Ruby had shared a bed for so many years that they slept together here too, leaving the other bed empty. Jenny would close her eyes and smell Ruby's hair on the pillowcase, feel the soft warmth of her skin without touching it. They took long strolls between meals. At first, they walked in silence, and then they sang together, Jenny harmonizing with Ruby's silvery soprano. They sang Stardust and All the Things You Are and You're My Everything. Jenny thought the music soothed Ruby, but afterward, when Ruby started to talk, she wondered.
Everything is out of kilter, she said. It's like I'm crooked inside. Sometimes I feel like snakes are crawling up my arms. I'm bad. I keep telling them I didn't do it, but they don't believe me.
Who? Jenny asked. Who doesn't believe you?
Them, she said. They tell me things.
What things?
They told me to cut off my hair, shame myself because Irene was marrying Sam.
Ruby reached up and touched her head, grimaced. Bessie had cut Ruby's hair into even ringlets, and most of the bald spots didn't show.
Your hair looks nice, Jenny said. It suits you, and there's no one telling you things, she repeated. It's your imagination.
No, Ruby said. It's like there's an animal inside me.
She stared at Jenny, and the pupils of her eyes were so dense, they almost eclipsed the green.
It's trying to get out, but I can't let it. It will tear the world apart. That's why I pray. I pray all the time, but it doesn't help.
Jenny knew that arguing with her would not help. She linked arms and kept walking.
Ruby went over and over the things she had done wrong.
I'm the oldest, and I didn't help Mama. I spent too much money. Did you know I lied to Papa about where I got that red silk scarf? I stole it.
She stopped by a tree and leaned her forehead on the rough bark.
I'm bad, Jenny. Bad. And I kissed all those boys.
What boys? Ruby stared at Jenny, her face hardened.
How come they sent you with me?
What? What do you mean?
You don't want to be here. Why did you come? Mama should have come.
Ruby turned and walked away, head down. Jenny watched her back, receding down the path. Ruby can always read my mind, Jenny thought. It was true. She did not want to be here. She had come, taking time off from her classes at Brooklyn College because everyone expected her to, because family came first. A shiver of anger rippled through her chest, but she pushed it down. She swallowed, hard, and ran to catch up with Ruby. That night at dinner, Ruby suddenly said,
I have to get married.
She pushed the potatoes around on her plate, making designs in the gravy.
I'm being punished for all the bad things I did. That's why Irene got married first.
That's crazy, Jenny said.
Don't call me crazy.
I'm not calling you crazy, Jenny said, grabbing Ruby's hands. I'm saying nobody is punishing you. Sam and Irene got married because they've loved each other forever, since they were little kids. A hard look settled on Ruby's face. Arguing with her was useless. Jenny looked down at their clasped hands. Ruby's nails were bitten down, the cuticles pulled and reddened. It was like she was eating herself. The sleeve of her sweater was pushed up to just below the elbow, and Jenny saw light red lines on the inside of her arm. They looked like cuts. Jenny took a deep breath.
How did you get those?
Ruby pulled her arm away.
They're nothing. Leave me alone.
They ate the rest of their dinner in silence.
On Sunday morning, Jenny and Ruby took the bus back to New York City and the subway home to Brooklyn. Ruby settled into her bedroom and seemed all right. Bessie and Abe got the report from Jenny about how Ruby had been, and although Jenny said things had gone pretty well, she was apprehensive. She didn't tell them about the strange marks on Ruby's arm. Let her mother see them herself. Irene and Sam came back that evening. They were going to stay with Sam's parents until they saved enough money for an apartment of their own, but they came for dinner to her parents on their first night back. They were holding hands, their faces glowing. They couldn't stop looking at each other, touching each other. The minute they entered the apartment, Ruby fled the room. Bessie turned to Jenny. Where did she go?
Seeing Irene and Sam together upsets her, Jenny sighed. She wants to get married. She thinks she needs to find a husband, like that will make it all right.
Maybe it will, Bessie said. Jenny just shook her head. Jenny could never remember exactly how it happened. There were whispered conferences at the table between her parents and Bubby Ida, punctuated by long silences if anyone came into the kitchen. She knew her parents had hired a shadchan, a Jewish matchmaker. Jenny had seen her several times sipping tea with Abe and Bessie, a skinny, sharp-featured woman who wore her head covered in a cloth wrapped as a sign of her piety, and who held her teacup with her pinky crooked in the air. All spring in 1941, the shadchan worked to find the perfect match. There were dinners where one or another young man mysteriously appeared at the table, and Ruby sat quietly as if sedated, her black pupils huge. Sometimes she went to the movies with them. Each time she wore the new dress that Bessie had bought for her and Bubby Ida's pearls, but nothing happened. At the end of some evenings, she shook her head no. Sometimes the young men came back, once, and then disappeared. Nothing was working. And then in June 1941, Abe brought home a widower and refugee from Berlin named Victor Strauss. For almost a year, he had been a clerk in Abe's hardware store in downtown Brooklyn. But except for Bessie, who worked there also, no one in the family had met him. Bessie told them that he was 29 years old, had been an engineer in Berlin, and had escaped Germany after Kristallnacht in 1939. The night he came, Bessie fussed over Ruby. Now remember, be still and don't talk too much. Smile. You have a beautiful smile. Jenny watched her mother brush Ruby's hair, which had grown out into a halo of light that shone around her face, saw her slip a silky lavender dress over her head.
Another new dress? Jenny asked.
Oh, just this time, Bessie said. She smoothed the shoulders, then she touched Jenny's arms. Isn't it pretty on her? Jenny walked out without answering. When they went into the living room, Victor was there, sitting on the brown sofa, leaning against the lace doily behind him. His hands lay on his lap, and he was opposite the wooden rocking chair where Morris was rocking back and forth in the silence. He jumped up immediately and bowed slightly to Bessie, to Ruby, to Jenny. He was of average height, with thick brown hair that fell on his forehead, and eyes that were so dark they were almost black. He had a mustache that marked two sharp slanted lines above his mouth. Just like Clark Gable, Jenny thought. He had the sweetest smile she had ever seen. At dinner, at the crowded table, Jenny was quiet, not trusting her voice. Ruby didn't talk, following her mother's advice, but Morris and Faye peppered Victor with questions about Berlin. Jenny thought they were being nosy. After all, he didn't know what had happened to his family in the past 2 years. They might be dead. Jenny saw shadows flicker over his face when he mentioned his parents or talked about his wife, who had died shortly before he left Germany. She marveled at his almost perfect English, which he spoke with a slight emphasis on the letter S at the end of his words. We would have left together long before Kristallnacht, but she was too sick to go, he said, explaining why he left Berlin so late. In the awkward silence that followed, Jenny could not take her eyes off him. She watched him lift his water glass and sip slowly,
She saw his tapering fingers play with the soup spoon, noticed the slightly worn cuffs of his shirt showing from his jacket sleeves. His nails were short, clean, buffed.
"Did you ever play the piano?"
she blurted. "Yes," he said. "Why do you ask?" With a shaky voice, Jenny said, I don't know exactly, but your fingers are so long they look like they should play the piano." She felt her cheeks redden and then a distinct pinch on her arm. Ruby, who was sitting next to her, glared. By the end of the evening, it was clear that everyone liked Victor, Ruby most of all. Over the next months, he came often to the Weissman's home, playing chess with Morris, taking Ruby to the movies on Saturday night, bringing flowers to Bessie when he came for dinner each Sunday afternoon. Some summer Sundays, they went to Coney Island, and Ruby came back sunburned and happy from sitting on the beach or excited from riding the Wonder Wheel. All through the fall and into the early December, Victor was a constant presence in her life. He had a calming effect on Ruby, and her occasional startling outburst did not seem to faze him. Life seemed serene, going in a predictable direction. The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor changed all that. Suddenly, the United States was at war with Japan, and everyone knew it was only a matter of time before there was war with Germany as well. Over the next months, lives suspended. Morris and Sam waited, talked about joining up or waiting for the draft, listened endlessly to the news, wondered what they should do. In the end, the waiting was too much, and they both enlisted in the Army. Victor talked about enlisting too, but Abe convinced him that he would do better to stay with him. He needed him in the store. And in early February 1942, Ruby and Victor announced that they would marry. Bessie and Abe beamed. They were congratulatory cries of mazel tov from everyone around the table. Jenny sat with her mouth open and finally dipped her head, nodded, and mumbled, "Congratulations." Glad that no one seemed to be looking at her except her grandmother. Jenny got up and began to clear the dishes from the table, and Bubby Ida followed her. "You don't like him?" she asked. "No, of course I like him. He's a wonderful man." Jenny scraped the remains from the dishes into the garbage pail while her grandmother filled the sink with hot water. "I just don't see how he can marry her," Jenny burst out. "Does he know?" Bubby Ida shrugged. "I didn't tell him." "Someone should," Jenny said.
"It won't be me."
"Mama thinks getting married is going to solve Ruby's problems. It won't."
"How do you know? It might make things better."
Jenny shook her head. "No, it won't. Maybe it will for a while, but it won't last. He doesn't know what he's getting into. Someone has to tell him." Bessie poked her head into the kitchen. "Come," she said. "We're toasting them." Jenny and Bubby Ida went into the dining room. Right now, Jenny thought, Ruby looked and acted perfectly normal. She wasn't talking fast. Her laugh was not too loud, not too wild. If Jenny hadn't seen for herself how unseen spirits and voices could possess her sister, she wouldn't have believed there was anything wrong with her. Ruby hugged Jenny and said, "There you are, little sister, my best friend in the world. Aren't you happy for me?" Jenny could only hug her back and whisper, "Of course I am." But that night, she could not sleep. And in the morning, she went to Bessie in the kitchen and said, "Mama, did you or Papa tell Victor about Ruby?"
"Tell what?"
"Don't be like that. You know what. How she gets sometimes."
"Papa talked to him. He understands. She is high strung."
Jenny was exasperated.
"She's more than high strung. You know she is."
"I know she will be happy and calm when she becomes a wife and mother. And you," Bessie glared at Jenny, "mind your business." She walked out of the room. But Jenny could not let it go. Jenny knew Victor could not possibly understand about Ruby. If he did, he would never marry her. One Thursday afternoon in late February, when the streets were slushy with snow that had fallen that morning, she waited outside her father's shop in Lower Manhattan, watching the last customers come out of the store with their packages. It was already dark out. the streetlights shining on the wet pavement, Jenny huddled in the doorway of the ladies' dress shop. She hadn't dressed warmly enough. She scrunched her toes in her shoes, trying to warm her cold, wet feet. She was wearing stockings and pumps to be fashionable, and now knew how silly that was.
She should have worn slacks and socks. Victor would never even notice.
She watched her breath in the cold air, like a mist in front of her face. Everything looked blurry. At 6 o'clock, she saw her father leave the store, and she ducked inside the dress shop until he passed so he wouldn't see her. Then she stepped quickly outside again.
In a few minutes, Victor came out, locking the door behind him.
He was wearing a worn camel coat with the collar turned up against the cold, his hands jammed in his pockets. He must not have gloves, Jenny thought. He wasn't wearing a cap like all the other shopkeepers, but had a brown fedora pulled low over his brow. He looked like a businessman. Taking a deep breath, she stepped in front of him.
Jenny, what are you doing here?
Her tongue felt thick, and she couldn't speak. She bit her lip.
What is it? Is everything all right?
She swallowed, nodded. Yes, of course, but I just wanted to talk to you, to make sure you... She stopped. She suddenly didn't think she could do this. Her heart hammered.
Make sure you knew, understood about Ruby.
The words hung between them. He reached out, touched her cheek. His hand was cold.
I do,
he whispered.
I know. You're very kind to worry, but you do not need to. I do understand.
No, really, she rushed in, the words tumbling fast. Do you know how crazy she is sometimes? How could you know? You haven't seen her. She's wild. She says she has a Dybbuk. Snakes inside. She steals sometimes. She tells lies. We can't trust her. She hears voices and does what they...
Stop.
Jenny.
Victor interrupted.
I know.
Jenny searched his face. His brown eyes held hers, never wavered.
You don't understand, she said, her voice dull. You can't, or you wouldn't marry her.
Yes, I do understand.
And you'll marry her anyway? He nodded.
Yes, I told your father I would.
Jenny closed her eyes. Well, she said, all right then. As long as you know, I've said it. She began to walk away, her feet dragged through the slush. There was a sick feeling in the pit of her stomach.
Jenny,
Victor called. She turned and waited. He stood there looking at her. Then he said,
thank you for worrying about me.
He came to her and kissed her cheek. She felt his warm breath, his mouth, the bristles of his mustache. Her heart lurched. She felt a rush of warmth below her belly. She closed her eyes. There was nothing more to do. She had to get away before she cried. At home, Ruby was waiting for her. She'd been shopping for her trousseau, and Bessie had bought her 2 lace-trimmed nightgowns in pastel colors and a deep purple jacket with a velvet collar.
Look, Jenny, Ruby showed Jenny her new jacket. Purple, my favorite color.
She waltzed around the room, grabbed Jenny by the waist, and sang to her,
somewhere over the rainbow.
The silver of her voice pierced Jenny and sent chills up her arms.
I was waiting for you. I want to show you something.
Look. She held out an antique cameo pin.
Victor gave it to me for a present last night. He can't afford a ring, so he bought this. Isn't it beautiful?
Jenny fingered the cameo. The pale apricot of the shell was translucent, and the face carved in it was delicate perfection.
It's beautiful, she said, her voice thick.
I'm going to wear it always. I'll never take it off. She pinned it back on her dress, turned to Jenny, and hugged her.
I want you to be my maid of honor.
Jenny stared.
What?
She should stumble down the aisle in a pink dress again, sick in her heart for them all? She had nothing to say. She didn't want to be Ruby's maid of honor or go to the wedding and watch Victor marry Ruby. There was a black taste in her mouth, like shame. I have to go to the toilet, she mumbled and ran into the bathroom, locking the door. She sat on the lid of the bowl with the lights off and waited for the nausea to disappear. She closed her eyes and said, "It's over. Forget it now. It's over." 4 months later, Ruby and Victor were married. Soon, Victor took more responsibility at the store, almost like a partner to Abe, and Ruby settled down. "See," Bessie said, "I always knew. She only needed the right man and she would be fine." Jenny struggled with her feelings. One evening, when she was helping Bubby Ida prepare dinner, she felt her grandmother's rough hand on her arm.
"You're not happy, are you, Mamala?"
Jenny's eyes filled. "I can't help it, Bubby. I want to be happy for her, for me, but I'm not." Bubby Ida sighed.
"You think you're in love with him, but you have to let go. They're married. He's your brother."
Jenny shivered. The thought that Victor was now her brother made her feel sick.